Hello and welcome to the Fastest Lab podcast, helping you to stay up to date with the fast-moving world of Formula One. Today we review the Canadian GP and what a race it was. So let's discuss it together. My name is Jan, and as ever, I'm with Vogel. Hello everyone to episode 41 of the Fast Lab podcast. And today we've got a lot to talk about. I really enjoyed the Canadian GP. What about you, Fergal?
Yeah, I thought it was a great race. Arguably the best of the year.
That's a tough choice, actually.
Yeah, I mean, right from start to the end, it was all action and very, very exciting. And yeah, I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, let's go straight to the beginning. I mean, yeah, qualifying. Well, or we could actually start with qualifying. I mean, I really enjoy close qualifying battles, but this qualifying in Canada and also the qualifying I can remember in China, where Hamilton really he pulled those great laps out of the back. And it was great to watch in Canada as well. I mean, like, what was it, 7/10 ahead of Bottas' teammate and 3/10 ahead of Vettel? I mean, that lap was really something special. And also, I really enjoy watching those laps. You can really see that something special is going on when the car is really connected to the driver, and was a good lap to watch. And yeah, with that, Hamilton equaled Senna's pole record. And I think you also posted it on Twitter. Now Hamilton is really one of the greats or something, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I always thought he was one of the greats for a couple of years now, and he's proven that he's one of the greats, especially when he pulls out laps like that. And I mean, it's not the first time he's done laps like that in qualifying, where he's just been basically unbeatable. The lap was just spectacular.
Yeah.
I know the F1 YouTube, the page on YouTube, they put up a video of the lap, and I mean, it was almost near perfect.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant, brilliant lap. And he matched Senna's record for a number of pole positions, which I kind of expected him. I actually think he'll break it's pretty likely he's going to break the outright record this year. I think he has 3 more pole positions to get before he beats Michael Schumacher's record. So
should be doable. Yeah.
Or before he matches his record. I think that probably will happen this year. And I think it's just a proof of how quick Hamilton really is, and how speaking for myself, how much I appreciate his talent in Formula One.
Yeah, I mean, that's a topic for a whole nother episode. I mean, yeah, his character is not the most, or he's not the most loved guy in Formula One, of course, but you can't take away from him that he's really, if he's at once with the car, he's nearly unbeatable and really one of the greats, as you said. Going straight to the race now after qualifying, what a start of Max Verstappen. I mean, the race start was pretty hectic for a Canadian GP start. I mean, the run to turn one is not too big, and we saw it in, when was it, 2016? Yeah, I think 16 also, where Vettel was able to overtake both Mercedes from P3, I guess, or was it from P3. So and basically Verstappen copied that, and he even didn't better start than that. I mean, he started from P4 to P5, P2. So, yeah, last year we voted Vettel's start in Canada as our start of the season. So I think this year we have to go with Verstappen if nothing else comes, nothing better comes across the corner.
Yeah, there's a lot of races left to go, but I mean, I think that will be up there at the end of the year as in contention for one of the best starts of the year, because it was just phenomenal. I mean, I think Canada, starting in Canada, is probably one of the toughest places in the year, because the run to turn one is fairly short and the track is really, really narrow. There's not a lot of space and there's not a lot of time to gain positions. But somehow Max, you know, he pulls out when he can and does, yeah, from P5 to P2, going around the outside of Vettel. That was a pretty great move in my opinion. Really aggressive, but you know, fair. But yeah, I think he's shown before that he can do starts well, and he really is just an out and out racer and can just pull off magic moments like that.
Around the outside and over the front wing.
Yeah, of course there was a tap on Vettel's front wing, which compromised Vettel's race. But yes. I mean, I don't blame Verstappen for any wrongdoing. But yeah, I think all in all, it was a pretty great start from him.
Yeah, and then turn two, turn three. Yeah, we saw big. Have you seen the onboard of Alonso?
Yeah.
It was crazy. Like, I wanted to turn in, and like, boom, there comes the Toro Rosso. Hitting Massa off the track, and the crash looked pretty spectacular. Although I'm not quite sure whether it was high speed. I mean, what are they doing there? Like, I don't know. But yeah, of course, the angle in which Sainz, of course, hit Massa was not too great, and yeah, everything started with Sainz and Grosjean, going head to head to turn three, and somehow I think Sainz said Grosjean was in his blind spot, and it looked really strange in my opinion. Like, I can't really believe he was in his blind spot, because didn't they touch? Didn't Sainz feel that?
Yeah, well, he must have been in his blind spot before. They obviously touched, and he moved over to try and overtake cars ahead, and just Grosjean was there in the way, and Sainz was sent into a spin. But I think what I actually found, first of all, it was. I'm happy that everybody was okay.
Yeah, of course.
Which is the main thing, of course. But after race, I thought it was quite funny that Grosjean described the accident like the one in Spa 2012.
Yeah.
Which of course, Grosjean was the... Well, I mean, some people blame Hamilton for that crash. Some people blame Grosjean. But that was probably one of the biggest crashes in Formula 1 in the last few years, anyway. And that was the crash that Grosjean got banned for for a race. So I thought that was quite funny. But yeah, the crash itself, I mean, I don't think there's much argument in the fact that Carlos Sainz was at blame for that. I mean, he just turned over in front of Grosjean, and Sainz himself accepted the blame, and of course he has a 3-place grid penalty for Baku in 2 weeks, which won't help him. But I think after the race, he did hold up his hands and admit that it was his fault, which I think is I think a majority of people who saw it agree that it was Sainz's fault.
Yeah, and I think it's really quite easy thing to do, and I'm amazed that we don't see things like that more often. I mean, the last time we saw it, I think it was in Singapore, where really, Hülkenberg, where he touched another wheel and he went off, and it's so easy to do to only touch another wheel and go off or something. And yeah, when it happens, it's most of the time it's a big crash. But yeah, with those wide cars and the narrow track, of course, easy to do. And but I'm also happy that it does not happen too often. And yeah, you already said with Vettel and Verstappen coming together in turn one, of course, yeah, it really compromised Vettel's race, because at the restart, well, of course, first of all, Ferrari and Vettel, they did not notice that the front wing is really damaged in a big way. I did not see it. It was like, yeah, it was a bit loose, but the real amount of damage only showed when the cars came to the restart. Vettel accelerated, and yeah, then somehow the whole right side of the front wing disintegrated, and Vettel, I think he tried to do another lap, but you could really see that the understeer was unbelievable in that car. And yeah, from then on, I thought the race was really done for him, but yeah, good strategy then by Ferrari. Oh, well, not a strategy, but good drive from him from last place then.
Yeah, it was, and the I think the reason that Ferrari didn't notice it was because after that crash, the safety car came out, and they wouldn't have really been getting useful information from the car because of the low speeds. So obviously when he saw something fly off the front wing, he knew that there was something wrong. And then, yeah, he even said actually after the race that he wished that they noticed it earlier, because then he would have been able to pit and join mm-hmm. onto the back of the safety car group, and he would have saved himself a lot of time in the race.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think it was unfortunate for him, but his recovery drive was great. His strategy was perfect, and he used all of his skill to get back through the field and do the best job he could, and I think he did a fantastic job in the race. But yeah, you sort of have to wonder, maybe could he have done a bit more if there wasn't that incident. Yeah, we'll never know.
Sure.
That's how racing goes sometimes. But yeah, I think all in all, considering he was at the back of the field at lap 3 or 4, it was a good drive from him.
Although you have to say, if we want to look at the race of Mercedes, it kind of felt like we are back in 2015 or something, where yeah, the Mercedes dominance was on, because well, both Mercedes, they really took off into the distance. I mean, they made a huge step compared to Monaco, of course, but I also feel like, or they even said that they found some ways to set up the car to make the tires work better, and it really seems like Mercedes could be ahead now of Ferrari. Of course, only a small amount of time, but at least that's my feeling. And we have, I would guess both Mercedes were cruising along at the front, no need to really torture the engine. And even with that, they finished like what, 40 seconds ahead of the Red Bull, including a safety car. Well, of course it was at the beginning of the race, but anyway. So yeah, it seemed like Mercedes really, really strong this race.
Yeah, but I think it's important to remember that this was Mercedes' first 1-2 finish of the season, such as being the step from Ferrari from 2016. And you know, we knew already that Mercedes were strong. Ferrari, well, Vettel was compromised at the start of the race, and yeah, Raikkonen also had some troubles throughout the race. But I think there are certain tracks that will suit the cars a little better than the others. I mean, in Monaco, for example, we saw that the Mercedes struggled there. Ferrari, well, to be honest, Ferrari in Canada didn't appear to be struggling as much as Mercedes did in Monaco. But I don't think Mercedes have found such a big leap in this space between Monaco and Canada to outpace Ferrari for the rest of the season. And I think a close battle will resume once again in the rest of the races. But yeah, I think Mercedes in Canada, certainly they were the strongest they've been all season, and they were. It's pretty weird to think that they have took their first 1-2 finish of the season, after 7 rounds. So, but yeah, they definitely had the stronger car, I believe, over the weekend, and yeah, they'll be happy to bring home the 43 points.
Yeah, and it's really interesting also to hear from some people around the F1 paddock how those tires are working, or how you get them in a working range. I think it was Martin Brundle who said that it's not really about the core temperature of the tire. It's really more about preparing the surface of the tire. It's really quite interesting to hear and even to think about it. I mean, all the drivers, or well, at least the drivers of the top team, all of them, they do have those infrared cameras or sensors measuring the top of the tires to really measure the temperatures inside and outside and whatever. And like, it's must be so difficult to get that chemical stuff on those tires. I mean, it's not really rubber. Might have like 1% of rubber in, but must be so difficult to get only the surface to work. And I think that has really been one of the biggest problems of Mercedes so far. Maybe they've managed to fix that.
And it's a big topic of criticism, I think, from a lot of the drivers, just how complicated and complex these tires are to get into the operating window. I mean, we've seen, for example, Lance Stroll throughout the season has been struggling to get them up to temperature just because of his inexperience in a Formula One car and with the tires. I mean, I don't really think that the tires should be worked in a way that they have to be pushed to get into an operating window so that the drivers can push themselves. You know, the tires need to be pushed so that the drivers can push the car, which, to be honest, I don't really agree with. And I think Pirelli maybe, well, in the future might look into that, because there's been a lot of criticism recently over that. But then there's also rumours, and, well, I think it's probably a topic for another day, that there could be a second manufacturer coming back into the sport, which I think would be fantastic for Formula One. But yeah, we'll see how that plays out, but I think that would be a very interesting prospect.
Just as we are talking about it, a thought came to my mind. I mean, if those tires, they've got a very specific window in which they operate, and yeah, possible. A lot of F1 fans, and yeah, for the spectacle, we want to have tires where drivers can, or where drivers should push, where they really should go for it and not have a coffee between the corners. But also, we want tires that degrade a bit more, and we have more variability in the pit strategies. So, a thought: what would happen if Pirelli design a tire where the working range is, or where the tire has to be in a really high working range, where the driver has to push, you know, putting a lot of load into the tires during the corners, and if the tire is not in that window, he loses a lot of time, and if he pushes on and isn't that window, the tire degrades a bit more, so that we maybe achieve both of that, so that that the drivers can push, but also we get more pit stops.
Yeah, well, that's the thing that they have to work on, and I think the main thing that they need to keep in focus is overtaking, especially with these new cars that are much more difficult to overtake. They need to give tires that degrade somewhat, because especially with the strategies, I mean, I think strategies play a key role in races and often lead to exciting races. I mean, not just overtaking in the pit stops, but allowing drivers to be on different strategies at different times to make one car faster than the other. Perhaps the faster car behind, for example, has to overtake the car in front, you know. So it's a variable. There's lots of variables that they're going to have to consider, but I think it's not the last of the issue that we're going to hear throughout the year. And I think Pirelli will at some point, Pirelli will be pushed into, I think, making changes by the teams, because I the drivers don't really, well, I mean, they work with what they have, but I think they'd much rather have a tire that they can just go out and push hard on, and not having to worry about getting it to a certain temperature to make it work.
Yeah, and you said it that Lance Stroll, he had some big problems coming into the season, but at his home race in Canada, he managed to score his first points, did some overtaking during the race. So a lot of happy faces at Williams. I wouldn't say it was the greatest race of him ever and was really outstanding, but of course good for him to score his first point.
Yeah, of course, there's going to be people that can try and pick some negatives out of his race like that. But no, I think he did a great job, and more than anything, what he'll do from that race is learn. You know, we in different races like Spain, for example. Actually, I think it was Spain. There was one race anyway where he was miles ahead of. I think he was 40 or 50 seconds ahead of Felipe Massa at one point because Massa had to make an extra pit stop. And then he ended up catching him and overtaking him, which was a bit, which didn't look great for Stroll at all. And I think in a lot of races so far, he's been just moving backwards, really, and just getting overtaken and having to defend. But for the first time this year, we've seen him attack and properly attack. And I think it was fantastic to do that, to see him do that. And to come away with points at his home race will give him huge confidence going forward. And must be a great feeling for him, first of all, to score points, but then to do it in front of his home crowd, I think is great. And I seen there was a lot of people, there was plenty of people supporting him throughout the weekend, which was great to see. And yeah, I'm pretty happy for him. But I think that this weekend, the being in a battle and wheel to wheel with cars attacking and, you know, really pushing himself to the limit will be a big learning curve for him in Formula One, and it'll be very interesting to see how he reacts in the next couple of events to see if this race has helped somewhat. And I'll certainly be keeping quite a close eye on him with a lot of interest.
And it would really be important for Williams as well now, with all the results of Force India, Toro Rosso, and so on. Williams is really falling back with only one driver scoring points regularly. So it's really important for them that Stroll also starts to score in more races than not. And yeah, I think it's really something to look out for. And as I said, Force India, again, scoring good points here in Canada. But the big talking point, of course, is their race strategy, Ocon and Perez. What's your take on that?
Well, I think I see it from both angles, really. Preferably, I mean, the race fanatic inside me would have liked to have seen Perez move over for Ocon and seen him attack Ricciardo. But I think, I mean, Perez was stuck behind Ricciardo for a long time, and then at the time where the orders were coming through, I mean, well, I can't really call them orders, it seemed like they were politely asking Perez to move over. I mean, if they wanted to get it done, they should have commanded Perez to do it, like, you know, Eddie Jordan style. To not overtake. But I think when those team orders came through, they were the three of the Ricciardo, Perez and Ocon were all starting to come up on traffic, and I think Perez saw that as an opportunity for Ricciardo to be held up and perhaps Perez to have another stab at it. But I mean, Perez was stuck behind him for a long time, and Ocon was probably quicker because he had much fresher tires. I mean, he pitted on lap 33 and Perez pitted on lap 20, so he had 13 lap fresher tires. I would have liked to have seen him give the spot back. And what sort of annoys me most out of it is the fact that, well, I don't want to say annoy, but what I don't really understand most out of it is the fact that Force India told Perez that if Ocon didn't get the spot, that he'd hand the position back. He'd be handed the position back by Ocon. So again, I can see it from both sides, but I think we may have been robbed of a debut podium for Ocon.
I mean, it's definitely very difficult to predict anything, and nobody knows whether Ocon would have been able to get that spot from Daniel Ricciardo, as you said. But how they handled the situation, Force India, I mean, that was really strange. Like, negotiating over the team radio between the two drivers was, like, it was a bit weird. I mean, Perez said also in a post race that it was the first time the team was in that situation and they had no plan what to do whatsoever. So yeah, that was maybe part of the problem. But yeah, I really missed someone like, I don't know, like Ross Brawn, or I don't know, someone who has got some good authority in the team and says, yeah, you have to do this, and or you should leave him by and whatever. And but not like, yeah, you if he gets close and blah, you know. And from what we've heard over the team radio, I can definitely understand Perez's decision, and I'm also a bit glad that, I mean, as you said, I can see it from both sides, and I'm glad that there's enough race blood in Perez that he did not just leave Ocon by. I mean, of course, the team is important, points for the team, points are important. But when I see like Bottas leaving Hamilton by, or like, what was it? I mean, all the time when we have those team orders, like, those drivers always become those stamp, like a stamp on their head with a number two driver or something. You know, it's, I have the feeling something little always dies in that driver, because I don't know, you accept that the other driver is faster and just let him go. I mean, it's difficult because, as I said, the team is important, but I'm happy that Perez did not just decide to let Ocon go.
Yeah, but I think you know, Ocon, he was definitely, well, I think for the amount of time that Perez was stuck behind Ricciardo, I think it would have been fair to give Ocon a chance, especially the fact that he was on much newer tires and arguably had more of a chance than Perez. But yeah, I agree. I mean, Perez wants hit the points for himself, but at the end of the day, it's the team. Well, I'm not gonna say it's the team that counts, but in within the Formula One paddock, within those 10 manufacturers, it is the team that counts. And any driver or part of the team will tell you that they're always looking for the maximum amount of points for the team. So I think maybe, yeah, Perez was a little, not afraid, but yeah, maybe he was just a bit fearful of getting outshone by his teammate.
I mean, he's not only driving for points, he's also driving for a seat next year, possibly.
Who, Perez?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely attracting the attention of some top teams. And has been doing so for a couple of years now. But I think, I mean, no one, I don't think anyone really denies Ocon's talent, and we've seen it for years since he was racing in Formula 3 when he won that championship, and then when he went to GP3 and he won that championship a year later, and he's been impressing in all Formula, and then in Formula 1 I think he's been doing a great job, and I think he's finished every single race of his career so far.
Yeah.
And if I'm right, I think he only has to finish something like 3 or 4 more before he holds the record for the like most consecutive finishes from your debut season.
Yeah, I think at the moment that record holds Max Chilton, right?
Yeah, Chilton, and then who actually ended that record in Canada in 2014. So yeah, I think well, Force India this year, they find themselves in a great situation, in my opinion. At the start of the year, we talked about just how close that midfield pack is, but Force India really don't seem to be a part of that midfield pack. I mean, if you look at the tables, they're, I think, even if you, to say, if Williams, for example, if you wanted, if you doubled Williams' points, just for argument's sake, for if you wanted Stroll to match Massa's points, I think Force India are still something like 30 or 40 points ahead. So I wonder if it's a big if Force India feel they can challenge for third position in the championship. I think it's a bit of a long stretch.
That's a big ask, yeah.
Yeah, and I think these next three, well, from Canada, Azerbaijan, and Austria, they're probably looking to outperform Red Bull, and if to do that, then they may have a chance. But I think it is a big ask. But at the end of the day, I think they have a fantastic lineup of Perez, who's experienced, and Ocon, who, you know, isn't exactly new to the sport. I think he has something like 15 starts or something like that now, and is showing real like speed. And yeah, I think, like you said there a couple of minutes ago in Canada, that incident was kind of the first time they ever had to deal with something like that, and I'm sure there'll be words shared in the debrief, but I'm sure Perez and Ocon still have a huge amount of respect for each other, and they seem to get along really well.
Mm-hmm.
And they both have really good reputations right now, so I think they'll move on from it pretty quickly and just target the next couple of races with strong heads.
And also Force India has got a Mercedes engine, which also helps, of course. They got a little upgrade for the Canadian GP. I think not so much in terms of peak power, but more in terms of running higher engine modes throughout the race. So that might be something that helps them if they really want to target P3. Because, I read that the Renault engine will not get actually any more upgrades or big upgrades towards the end of the season. Just small updates and software updates and so on. And I think that's certainly not what Red Bull hoped for. But on the other hand, could be worse. Let's talk about Fernando Alonso in lap 68.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of same old story really, isn't it?
It's unbelievable.
I think, isn't that like the third time it's happened this year? It's either the second or third time anyway where he's retired with just a couple of laps to go. But I'm sure this time it hurt even more because the fact that he was running in 10th. And that's the second time it's happened in two races now. I mean, in Monaco, Van Dorn was running in 10th before he crashed out. I think it's very frustrating now for McLaren, very frustrating for Alonso. I mean, he even said after the race that 10th place to him is it really means nothing, but he knows to the team a point would have been, you know, a big achievement, which is very, very sad considering it's McLaren.
Yeah.
Who are like the second or third most successful team in Formula One history. So it was a huge shame for him, and really felt sorry for him. But you know what? I wasn't surprised. I just wasn't when I seen it happen.
Yeah.
I was sad for him and sad for McLaren, but I just wasn't surprised.
Yes, sad but true. Sad but true. I mean, I think the signs are showing towards Mercedes engine next season, or well, at least not a Honda engine next season. I mean, there are fewer and fewer people expecting a Honda engine in the back of the McLaren for next season. But of course, I think we'll hear more about that after the summer break or something. They want to meet with Honda and everyone involved, and of course Mercedes, or maybe Renault, who knows. But I think Zak Brown, he said it in an interview after the Canadian GP, McLaren needs to be proactive and they need to do something. And 3 years now, no progress, breaking down like nearly every race. It's really unacceptable, and you could nearly speak of a breach of contract from Honda's side, because they're not delivering the product McLaren asked them to deliver. So that's going to be another interesting story, of course, for next season. The Honda team wasn't the only team with problems. Also Ferrari strangely had a, it was like a brake by wire issue. It seemed like the same issue the Mercedes cars had in 2014, you know, where the recovery from the rear tires stopped working, and then rear brakes overheated, and it seemed like Kimi had the same issue there.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen before in Canada, it's a very, very tough track on brakes, because there's, well, I mean, I think out of all the braking zones, all but one are hard braking zones, so it's a very, very tough race for brakes. And Kimi's brakes, yeah, seem to fail towards the end, which actually probably saved Ferrari a bit of a headache, because Vettel was catching Raikkonen at a lot of pace near the end of the race, and it would have been very interesting to see what would happen when they closed up on each other. I mean, I imagine Raikkonen would have let Vettel through, maybe. I mean, Vettel was on a different strategy. Well, they're on the same strategy, but Vettel's tires were, I think, 8 or 9 laps fresher than Raikkonen, so that would have been interesting. But yeah, the brake issue, I mean, it's not something new. We've seen around Canada, it's notorious for being very difficult on engines and brakes, and I think it was bound to happen to someone. And yeah, I think it was unfortunate that it happened to Kimi, but he held on to P7, was it? Yeah, P7. Yeah. So, which, I mean, isn't really great for Ferrari, also because of, well, Vettel and fourth, but I guess Vettel's race was handled differently because of a different situation. But yeah, not great for Ferrari to finish the day fourth and seventh. It's not really what they would have expected, but I think they should be okay for the future.
But you really have to say that again, after Monaco, Vettel showed much better pace compared to Kimi. I mean, Vettel had that failure of the front wing, had to pit, and there was no safety car in between, and still Vettel caught up to Raikkonen at the end of the race. So not the best of races in general for Kimi there. All the other way around, really good race by Vettel, and I think he finished off that great race with a great overtake on Ocon. It was into turn one. I mean, like, I really hold my breath when he started braking on the dirty side of the track. Like, you could really see the rear of the car going light, and I thought, like, oh my god, I hope he's not crashing into one of those Force Indias into turn one. I mean, like, well, it was really, I have to say, it really showed the talent of Vettel to control that car, not to lock up a tire, and good overtaking move, I must say.
Yeah, I mean, if you remember back to his years at Red Bull, countless times where he was leading from the front, you know, nearly every race in let's say 2013, for example, was like what Hamilton did in Canada this year. You know, he led from the front every lap and just disappeared, and many people questioned whether he could actually race wheel to wheel or not. And
yeah,
we've seen a few times this year that he can.
China
and even Spain. So I think, and here again in Canada, and yeah, that was a really, well, I mean, dangerous is a word you could use, but you know, that's part of F1, and it was really the edge of seat sort of overtake, and it was great to watch though. And yeah, Ocon got squeezed wide and yeah, fell back a bit, but I'm sure Vettel would have overtaken him anyway.
Yeah, it was a racing incident, of course.
Yeah, yeah. There was no one really at fault for that. But Vettel was much faster than the Force Indias, and he was even so much faster than Ricciardo. I think on the last lap he made up like, I think almost 3 seconds on Ricciardo.
One more lap, and yeah.
Yeah, one more lap, he would have been on the podium. Like I said at the start of the episode, a great recovery drive from Vettel, and yeah, that little overtake at the end was great to watch.
Talking of Vettel, well, was he a driver of the weekend? We'll discuss it in that segment. Driver of the weekend. We discuss which driver showed the best performances in practice, quali, and race. so driver of the weekend, I think. There are, well, in my opinion, there are only two drivers you could really pick for driver of the weekend. And, well, actually you could pick more, but for me personally, I would decide between Vettel and Ocon. And I mean, Vettel, as I said, really good race compared to Kimi, and also good recovery drive, good overtakes. Ocon really also showing that he had the pace. And I think for me, driver of the weekend, I would really go for Ocon. I mean, really, really strong drive, and also, yeah, mature. He showed good maturity behind his teammate. I mean, he was not like weaving all over the place, trying desperate moves. He seemed really controlled and good weekend. Although he only finished fifth, of course, I think it was a really good weekend. And for me, it showed like that Ocon is really, he has all the potential to be a great driver.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, Ocon had a great weekend, and I think he's a bright future ahead of him. Yeah, but for me, I'm gonna go boring.
No, come on.
I think you know what's coming next. I mean, I don't know. I think, yeah, I mean, I will go with Hamilton this time for driver of the weekend, which I know many people might disagree with. I can hear you shaking your head at home. Yeah, I mean, I think it was just a faultless weekend by Hamilton. I mean, sure, he was out in front by himself in the race and had not much to do, but considering his qualifying lap as well, that was just sensational. I think, you know, I'm not denying that Ocon and Vettel had great races. I mean, without a doubt, they had incredible races, and Vettel perhaps drove better than Hamilton in the race. But of course, it's driver of the weekend.
Yeah.
Just considering Hamilton's lap and matching Senna's record, and but the lap itself was just phenomenal. And out in front, he didn't blink once. I mean, even when he came in for his pit stop, he came out in the lead again. Such was his the greatness of his drive. And I think he did a fantastic weekend. And I think it was his fourth Grand Slam of his career, which is great for him, and something he really needed after Monaco and the disappointment there. Again, not taking anything away from the drives of, even Ricciardo had a great drive in the race, and Vettel and Perez and Ocon. But for me, this week I'm gonna go with Hamilton.
All right, I can totally understand that. But yeah, thinking about the race, I think there were a lot of good drives, plenty of positives to take away. Of course, not if you're a McLaren Honda, but positive race for Stroll, good recovery for Vettel, good race for Force India, good race for Mercedes as well. So yeah, and I think on that positive note, we can end here. And yeah, thank you very much for listening, and I hope you will be back with us next week. So until then, goodbye.
Goodbye.
All right.
Awesome.